Train Shuffling is brought to you by Midgard Hobbies and Games, your friendly local game store located in Derry, New Hampshire. And most importantly, we're brought to you by our wonderful patrons. If you'd like to buy a share of Train Shuffling, visit us at patreon.com/trainshuffling.
Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to Train Shuffling, your train shuffling podcast where train shufflers train to shuffle trains. And hi.
And you are?
Oh, I'm Eric Heiden.
I'm Johnny Hollander.
And today we are absolutely blessed by an angelic presence. It's happened. My wife, Allie, is here to talk with us.
Hi, it's me. I'm Allie, a special guest.
Thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm happy to be here. This is my first ever podcast appearance, so it's a train shuffling exclusive.
It's a weird format too, because we're actually all sitting together in one room,
making strange eye contact.
We just finished a game of Union Station by Travis Hill, and we are here to do a podcast. It's an episode that's a little bit outside of the normal format that we usually do. We're not going to have train facts, although we will have a fun train story from Allie. She's got something on tap, and it's probably going to be lackluster now that I said it, and she'll get real nervous. And we're not going to do the news. It's been a while since the last time we've done the news and an episode, actually. And I don't really feel like doing that. And so for the sake of getting this podcast out there and for everyone to hear our thoughts on this interesting new game, we're not going to do that. We're just going to record. Yeah, so an upcoming Kickstarter is happening for Union Station. If people don't know about this game, it's designed by Travis Hill, who has been doing some... He did Card Rails, right, Johnny?
Yep.
Which we have not played yet, but we have copies of.
Yes. And do you have your copy?
I got the digital, okay. And I haven't printed one up yet because you have a physical game. Yeah. But I do plan at some point to make that. And we got a preview copy sent to us by Dan Newman of New Mill Games, which is a cool new company. He described it as taking the punk rock approach to publishing games, doing small print runs of games, and then immediately returning the license to the publisher, or the designer rather, so that the game can sort of get in people's hands. Small format, generally, I think. This one came in one of the small USPS mailers, and it fit like exactly in it. It's like the box was designed to fit
so perfectly that both you and Allie told me the story of how perfectly it fit in the box.
It was strangely satisfying.
Yeah, there's like an Instagram, many of these feeds of like, things fitting nicely into other things and like how satisfying that is to some people. And this triggered that response for me. I was like, oh, it's perfect. It's right. It's, you open the box and there's no space left.
It's like instantly games 10 out of 10.
It was like way back when you made inserts for some board games. It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
Except more perfect.
Except much better.
Yeah, thanks. So we just finished a game of this, and Allie has played a handful of Cube Rails with us. So why don't you just give everybody an idea of your level of interest and experience in like train games?
No pressure.
No press. Train game. So,
like, what have you played?
What have I played? So I've played Irish Gauge a couple of times. Chicago Express a couple of times. Is that it? Are those the games I've played?
I think that's it.
I've played other games, but not many in the train variety. Oh, we could throw in, what is it? My First Journey.
Ticket to Ride.
Ticket to Ride.
Yeah. There's also Mini Rails, too. You've played Mini Rails.
Yes.
And Train Adjacent Bus.
That's right. Bus a couple of times.
That's not really in our wheelhouse, but it's kind of a train.
So do you like them?
Of the Cube Rails, I haven't really dipped a toe into the full 18XX genre, but I would say I'm like lukewarm. Usually I enjoy more Euro type games, lots of Castles of Burgundy. That was kind of the classic. We did a lot of that for a while. Cube Rails, I'd say lukewarm.
We'll take it.
5 out of 10.
You gotta make me put a number on it. Maybe, yeah. Yeah, that's fine.
She started.
Was kind of going four, but you know, depends on, I guess. Do I have plans?
am I really bored?
Is there anything good on TV?
Do I need to? Am I going away for the weekend? So I need to give Eric some extra joy in the form of playing a board game.
Like this weekend.
Like what's happening tomorrow?
So I just wanted to ask you those things. I knew all that, right? But I wanted everyone else who's listening to sort of have an idea, frame your perspective around what you know, what kind of games you like to play and what you like. So, but we thought it would be interesting to have Allie's perspective on the game, because we always hear from people who are frothing at the mouth to play train games generally.
Foaming
foamers, really. Yeah, that's actually a great segue. Before we get into this game, do you want to tell the story about foamers?
I'm gonna hop right into my little non-train fact, but my little tidbit. Well, we've been watching The Walking Dead, catching up on the latest season, and there's an episode where one character, for those of you who are familiar, Eugene, he is a mega nerd, super nerd, painfully awkward most of the time, but he actually makes a reference to being in some town, and of course now I don't remember what the town was, in Pennsylvania, I think, which... perhaps all you listeners know it's famous with trains. I'm sorry. I'm not very good at telling stories. this was all just a ploy to get evidence of how bad I am at telling stories. So Eugene had gone to this town and was talking to this other character on the show. And he was saying he was not a foamer. Correct? He said he was not a foamer. Yeah. But the fact that he even used that term on this network show, I was surprised and delighted and had many laughs because of Eugene.
Yeah, it's come up recently because we've posted, if you're in our Discord, you know, we've posted a couple of videos of foamers and talked about them on the podcast, and I think linked a few in the show notes of people just going nuts over trains and like, oh my God, look at it go, and freaking out. And Allie, if you're following our Twitter account, Allie, when she was away for 1 week in Portland.
I didn't realize you posted that.
Yeah.
You posted it.
Sent me a video of the narrow gauge train in Portland going through the middle of town and just going, oh, look at it. Whoa. Look at it go. And just memeing, foaming stuff. So it was delightful. Anyway, there's our train tidbit. Thank you, Allie.
You're so welcome.
So let's talk about the game. We just finished a play, and just a disclaimer, this is not a full review of the game. It's a first impressions. We don't have, you know, an abundance of plays, and we wanted to get our thoughts on the game out there before the Kickstarter. The only other frame of reference that I have is the very interesting and creative episode on the same game by Train Rush. And they, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but they didn't really like the game too much in the end, I think. Or like their review wasn't super positive. Is that fair?
Yeah,
they had criticisms for sure.
They definitely had criticisms. I don't want to say picked apart, but they kind of went through every aspect of the game and really broke it down.
Yeah, they're super
thorough. And I think they came to the conclusion that a lot of things were like too random and
yeah, not to their taste. Fair statement, right? So I actually went into the game a little bit trepidatiously. Mm. Thank you. It's an adverb. Because of that, right? And I had a great time with this game. I like it more than I thought I would. And I'm a person who can tolerate a little randomness in my games, and I think that was a major issue. I don't want to dwell too much on the Train Rush's opinion, but I do want to just say that I think, you know, spoilers, have a more positive opinion on the game. I think Johnny's probably a little bit less.
Well, so it was interesting because as I was listening to it, I felt like their opinion mirrored my own about, we'll say, 80% of the things that they said about the game. Since then, I actually think there may be a little bit more to unpack. It's really hard to say with only a few plays under our belts, but it's not quite as, after the first play, it seemed like there might be some patterns that were going to be the same every time. I'm not quite so sure about that anymore. Okay. So yeah, I will say I enjoyed it more than I expected. If we're giving our take on it up front and then diving deeper later, I'll say it's not one I would seek out to play with the number of amazing Cube Rails games that are out there. Okay. But I wouldn't turn down a game of it.
Okay. So just to give a very brief overview of the game, because some people, like, if you want to know every detail, I'd say go read the rules. They're out there. This game is available for free print and play, I believe, on BGG. The files are up. They look beautiful. This production copy that we have, that there's going to be a Kickstarter for in October. I don't know the exact dates, and I will put them in the show notes as soon as I have them from Daniel. It is a new production of the game. It is a small one, like I said. I don't have the exact size, but it fits in one of those small mailers perfectly. And it's actually a disc rails game. It comes with little discs.
Is there a difference between this copy and the production copy? I thought there was like one thing that was different.
The copy that we have has one of the colors, I think orange or red, is actually getting replaced with white. But other than that, it's the same game. Yeah. And then I think there's like a typo that
I kind of wish that he'd replace one of the blue or black ones, because those are hard to, not the discs themselves, but the colors. The blue is so dark, it's actually kind of hard to distinguish from the black on the board.
You think so?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. All right. I don't know about that. So quick overview. The game starts off with an initial auction. You have five different companies. They get shuffled up one share each, and you put them out there. And from top to bottom, you auction them off. You have $30 to start. It's always $30. That's kind of an important number. First person bids minimum of $5. Then it's bid till you pass. Last person standing wins. And that is the par price of the company. Then the person who won has to then put up the next one down the line. And you go down. And all the companies are not an equal number of shares. They go from black has four in our game. Yeah, it's black. And red has eight. And then every company between is, you know, four, five, six, seven, eight. After the initial auction, the company that is the lowest in par price goes first. And then on your turn, you can build track, which is putting two cubes down in a hex. You got to start from Chicago and you build out from Chicago, and you just have to be, you know, build out. You can't like hop a space. When you hit a small town, your revenue goes up, and there are little, in this production copy, they are gold circles that mark where on the market value track. It's a share dilution game, so the full dividend payout is split between the shareholders. So if you have one share, you get whatever the current value is of the company. If you have two out, you divide by two. Three, you divide by three. In this game, you can sell shares. Johnny, you want to talk about selling shares real quick?
Yeah, sure. So on your turn, if you decide to sell shares, you pick which company you're going to sell shares from, and you sell all of the shares from that company that you own. That will pay out its current value, and then it will drop it one row on the stock market, I guess.
Yeah.
And is there more to say about selling shares? The shares, yes. When the shares are sold, they are no longer part diluting the shares. So only shares that are currently player held are counted when you determine how to split the dividends.
Right. You remove the shares from the game when you sell them. And Al, you want to talk about buying shares?
You buy them with the money you have.
Okay, so that's beautiful. The shares that you buy, you can't just buy any shares in the game, and this is kind of the big wrinkle, right? There's a random deck. You shuffle all the shares in the game up after that initial auction, one of each company, and you put them face down in what's called the offer deck. And you flip during that initial auction. I think you can see the first one on that will be available, and then you put that out, and then a lot of actions in the game will push shares out to the right of it, and to the right of it is the share value plus one space, the plus two space, and the plus three space.
Specifically, laying track and buying a share are the two actions that will slide the shares down.
Once that thing fills up and it goes to plus one, plus two, plus three, it never empties again because everything always refills it. But when you buy a share in the plus three share value spot, that company's value immediately goes up three, and it can cause a dividend to get paid out. So that's the thing. You have a limited and random number, but you can sort of see what's coming, a selection of what you can buy.
Also, so there's a block on the board called the Chicago Union Station Company. So each time someone buys a share during the game, the corresponding color of that company moves down this little block. Each movement is increased by another dollar value of five. So first time you buy a share, moves down the $10 spot. If you buy a second share, then it crosses the 15 line. And once all five companies have been, you know, a share has been purchased and they cross over one of those dollar marker lines, then it pays out for everyone who's holding shares in that company, but it's split among the by the number of shares.
Oh yeah. So the first time we played, we walked away saying, so basically you just want to own as many shares as possible, because what we did was paid out the $10 per share for all shares.
Right. Or 15 or 20. So yeah. At the end of the game, Johnny had the most shares, and it like a Union Station thing triggered, and he had whatever, 10 shares or yeah. If he had 10 shares, we paid $20 per share. So he got $200, you know, or something.
Our scores were also incredibly high. Like we were in like the $500 to $600 scores.
We paid out way more than we should have. But really what's supposed to happen is, like Ali said, you know, if she and I each have a share of Red and that thing triggers at the $15 mark, then we would each get $8, right? Because it's divided and rounded up. Everything
it's
is
just a special dividend round, just like when you connect your three roots in Irish gauge.
Right.
It's treated like any other but it's treated like any other dividend in the game. That dollar value on the Union Station chart is paid out to the company and then split amongst the shareholders.
Yeah. It's like any other dividend in the company or in the game, except something we didn't mention, the three end game triggers for the game. One is that 20 dividends have been paid out. One of the other ones is that all of the shares have been bought. And the third, which is the one that triggered in our game this last time, is that all of the companies can no longer lay track. Like nobody left can lay any track.
Right. Yeah. Because one of the interesting bits in this is that all companies start in Chicago and radiate outwards, and they all have a destination. Even if a company has leftover cubes or disks, in this case, as soon as a company reaches their destination, it can no longer lay track. So the company is somewhat defunct. It can still move up and potentially pay dividends if further shares are purchased, but it will no longer move up by laying track and reaching cities. So it slows down quite a bit once you've reached the destination.
I'm realizing now that we both gave kind of an impression on the game and that we didn't ask Allie.
That was rude.
Allie, why don't you tell us what you thought about Union Station after one play?
Oh, wow. I thought you'd never ask. What were my impressions? I really appreciate the form factor. I know we keep talking about how it fits in that stupid little box, but that is very satisfying. I don't know if this is maybe because I traveled a lot as a kid, but any kind of almost travel sized game, it just tickles the cockles of my heart just right. And so I like that it's easy to pack. The game itself, it felt very similar to Irish Gauge for me. And maybe that's where I get a little bit lost in some of the train game cube rails land. And I hope I don't make anyone upset. But a lot of it, from my kind of outsider perspective, seems very similar. So it gets, for me, it seems like almost splitting hairs with just the kind of different variations that go on in the gameplay. I understand that's deeply satisfying for some people. I respect that. But for me, it's like, well, why do I have to learn another game that, Eric, you have brought home? We already have this other one that you've already taught me. And why do I got to keep learning new games?
And I guess with cube rails, it's a little, with 18XX, the games are very long and they take a long time to teach. So it's there's a lot of value in the fact that they're all based on the same framework and you only have to learn the differences. That doesn't really apply to cube rails because the games are, you know, usually one page of rules. They're very simple. And basically the whole thing is differences because of the form of the game. There's not a lot of extra stuff. There's the like three or four actions that you can take in the game, and the map might be different. And there's the, you know, the different MacGuffin.
So just a quick defense. Part of the reason why I keep buying games and keep teaching you games is that I haven't found one yet that you go, oh yeah, I love this one. So I just got to keep trying. Well, what about this one? This one, you say you don't like auctions in this other game that I think maybe you've said you don't really like auctions too much. So I got a game, Ride the Rails, that doesn't have any auctions. Hey, and we can play that one. Actually, yeah. So what do you think about that? I thought in the past that you've said, not a fan of auctions terribly, but we have an initial auction in this game. How'd that feel? You didn't really seem to notice it.
I felt like I had extremely low stakes and was just in it to kind of be a third player for you guys and, you know, just kind of check it out and see how it was. So I was not in it to win it. I was just...
But you did.
But spoiler alert. Yeah, destroyed.
And she wasn't even trying, apparently. Yeah,
just along for the ride to arbitrarily crush you. You two guys with a podcast about train games.
We never said we were good at them.
That's true. We're not. I pride myself in not being good at these games. Take that, all you other people who think you're great at them. We didn't mention game length. It's a really short game. It's an hour at its maximum, I think.
Yeah. Interesting how much longer that is than what I was told initially it would take.
So I advertised this as 30 to 45 minutes is what I said.
Yeah. And you know what? That's really on you because you've known Eric long enough to know that if he's trying to get you to play a game, it's probably 15 to 30 minutes longer than he tells you it is.
That's true. So for, you know, many years ago now, through much trial and error and heartache, I figured out that, for instance, house projects, any kind of home repair work that needs to be done, multiply by 3. Factor of 3 for any kind of housework that needs to be done.
That's my board game factor.
Board game factor. See, that's a good question. Probably factor of 2.
2? Oh.
I mean, no. So you told me this was 30 minutes. You said this is short game.
That's risky. 30 minutes. Because you know Allie will walk away if she's not enjoying it.
I mean, what? Or a factor of, what do you say? 1.5? Like, if, you know, something like that? Yeah. It's always a little optimistic. Eric here is an optimist. And you got to take it with a little grain of salt sometimes.
If it makes you feel any better, it's not just with you. I've noticed that if there's a game Eric really wants to play, the teach is simpler, the game length is shorter.
He does
then
the
went
same
into
thing.
Game that he doesn't
Johnny
want to play.
Johnny does the
and
same thing.
Maybe, but I don't notice it when I do it. Yeah. But it might be a thing that everybody does.
I think that's a...
But it's not just to get you to play it.
I don't know if it's universal.
Fair. I think it probably is.
I've known many gamers now, and whenever they're trying to push a new game that they have or something they're psyched about, and you do it too, I definitely do it. We all do it. It's like, oh, no, it's fine. It's simple. It's quick. It's easy. Whatever, you know.
I mean, and I think I'm honestly guilty of it too when we have friends over or we're with family and we're trying to play some kind of fun, you know, light party game or whatever. Even then, there's a pretty, you know, no one really wants to spend a lot of time going over rules and stuff. They just want to dig in and have fun. So I think I'm also guilty.
So let's get back to the game a little bit. We were talking about the destinations, the fact that you can destinate in this game and then you're done. Yeah, it's a term that...
That's not a word.
...comes up in... Yeah, it's a word in train games.
Everyone, that's not a word.
Well, it is, so take that. You can destinate in games in this game, and when you do, your company's done, right? So thoughts on that, Johnny? What did you think about the root building in this game and like competition between... Did we have, you know, well, was it cutthroat? No, you know.
I agree with Allie that destinate is not a word.
But I guess two things can be true. It is both not a word and a term used in train games. I'd never heard that one before. That's new.
What did I think about that?
Like, yeah, the destination mechanic.
So the board I don't find to be very interesting in general. I think that reaching a destination and how many cities you can hit along the way is probably going to become very standard the more times you play it. And it may change depending on how the deck comes out, because whether you can get that +2 or +3 to push it over the edge could determine whether you shoot for a city, or maybe you have somebody else that you are afraid might lay some hate track, and so maybe it's actually better for you to reach 2 cities than to reach your destination. So there might be little bits that change here and there depending on how the deck is dealt, but overall I think it's relatively bland in terms of the map portion of it. And companies stopping building, I don't know how I feel about that, because I feel like it can happen very quickly, and
it would just
make for a shorter game, but you could have a lot of the shares never come out because companies finish quickly and maybe you don't want to buy them anymore. So I don't know over the long term how I'll feel about it, but so far I think it's fine.
So something I noticed in this game, because last game we played, the destinating didn't happen till like near the end of it. In this game, all the companies did, and a few of them were like right up front. It was like the first third of the game. They were done. Two of them, I think. And those shares came out in the market, and those the plus one, you know, to buy spots, and they sort of clogged things up. And you're like, well, I want to get more shares. I'm the owner of this company that is now done and it's not moving forward anymore. And now I need to either buy that share myself or someone else needs to buy that share, but they don't have any incentive to do it. And it just can clog the works up. So yep. I don't know. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. I'm not going to try to rewrite the rules of the game, but I almost wonder if stalemates are possible. We didn't really find that. There were a couple rounds where people didn't want to buy, but there were other actions that were still good to take. It wasn't like we just evolved into hate track. Actually, I think there was only one
you did
action, which I did to try to use up some track. But if there is a chance for, if a stalemate becomes a common thing, I almost wonder if it would be nice to have some way to pull off the last card or sweep the whole thing or something, you know? So, because I think that could get frustrating if over many repeated plays we find that it often ends in a stalemate where nobody wants to buy the things on auction.
Well, then just maybe you don't offer. You don't destinate. Then you just buy more shares first before. I don't know. Yeah. What did you think about destinating and...
Let's see. Well, as far as laying track, having a specific destination for each company made it feel maybe like there was a little less analysis paralysis in the works, because you could see, you know, if you have shares of a certain company and you do eventually want to get that plus five on that company, it gives you a general direction to head in. Not that I have a ton of comparison, but just thinking of Irish Gauge, where you don't have that specific mechanic, it's more open-ended. And so it feels like there's more variability. The game can kind of go in many more directions. But I think some of that too is just this is designed to be a shorter game. So having a little more constriction in what your options are is, I think, not necessarily a bad thing.
As long as there are interesting decisions elsewhere in the game, I think that's totally fine. There are plenty of 18XX games where the opening tracks are completely scripted. Right, and right. There's some, you know, and they may not all be to everyone's taste, but for the most part, the games that have scripted openings are still well-liked games because there's a lot of other interesting things.
Right. That's just not where the game is.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on from the map a little bit. Let's talk about the randomness. The deck is random. I am of a mind that makes this game a little bit more friendly to new players, leveling the playing field in general. Randomness, I find, brings the skill gap closer to, you know, for a new player and an experienced player, which I don't like in all of my games, but I do definitely enjoy that, especially as a person who, like, loves these games, plays a lot of them, and then tries to bring new people in, like Allie or my father-in-law or just any new player. I don't want to crush them or have to throttle my play just for them to have an okay time. So that's kind of cool. And I think that it makes the game, it shifts the game from like total strategy to more tactical play. Like, you have to make decisions as they present themselves. You might get screwed a little bit if the shares you want don't come out, but you do know that, you know, red shares are more, there's more of them, so they're more likely to come up, right? There's a little bit of a playing the odds aspect to it. I don't know what you think.
They also come out so slowly. There's so few of them out at one time that, yes, you could get screwed, but it's really hard to analyze that because there's so many, like at the end of the game, there were a couple of red shares. And if I bought a red share, it would have moved the company up and then you would have bought another share. And you would have ended up making it would have been worse for me than laying hate track and then letting you buy the last share and have the company pay out less in the end. It was slightly less bad for me to do that. And I didn't really have a choice to make. There was one right decision, but did I get screwed? I don't know. There were plenty of other decisions throughout the game that I made that led to that moment. So in a game like this, I think it's really hard to say that the randomness, to pinpoint a moment in time for the randomness that actually cost you the game. And I don't think that's going to happen often where you're going to be able to say it's because this share didn't come out when I needed it to or something like that.
I don't know that I have opinions on the randomness because it was basically just when the shares entered the marketplace, right?
Yeah, that's all we're talking about.
And then it's just everyone else's decisions. And I guess you don't consider that in randomness, correct? When you're evaluating a board game? I don't know how you typically... other players' decisions are not considered randomness. Yeah, it's just the cards. Gotcha. Right.
Yeah, so just to clarify, like a lot of the games that we like, these 18XX and Cube Rails games have like player consequence and like chaos from the other players, right? Their decisions are where the, it's not randomness, but you know, you can try and predict that, right? It's different than true randomness. But in this game, you truly do not know what, when you flip that card that's coming up, the next share that's available, that's random. And that's output randomness, right? It's something that, it's happening, it's going to happen as throughout the game. You don't know up front what it is, as opposed to input randomness, where it's like you shuffle the cards and you splay them in a line and can see the exact order, but it's different every time. Some people really don't like output randomness because you can't make the best decision.
Right, yeah. So I would say it doesn't seem like this game does have a ton of randomness then, because it's really just the shares and there are only a couple showing at a time, which I mean, maybe means that each random card that comes up has kind of greater consequence because there aren't as many to buy from, but that didn't bother me at all. But I'm probably in the same ballpark as you, Eric, where you don't really mind some randomness, at least in some of these games. And I think for something like this where it's short, then a little randomness is fine.
Yeah, that's kind of my metric, is if the game is not long, randomness is fine. In fact, sometimes preferable. And also, these games are still highly mathematical and somewhat statistical. Like if there's still at every moment in time, probably a right and a wrong decision. And you have a series of these right and wrong decisions to make throughout the game. So that's where I don't think the randomness really defines, like that's not determining the winner.
Right. Yeah. Cause everyone still has to make their decisions based on whatever randomness is presented. So it's not like it's completely controlling the outcome of the game.
Right. Yeah. It's like in poker, you can, if you make the right decision every time over a lifetime of playing poker, you're going to win. But you can have a bad beat where you make the exact right decision and the card comes up and it's not the card you needed, you know?
And that's what people get upset about generally. Yeah. You know, if they can't handle that, like, I made the best decision, but the card was green instead of blue when it flipped and I got screwed because of it.
Right. Rah. And you can factor that into your decision too. If there's two seemingly similarly good decisions that you can make, and one of them is going to cause a new share to flip, and that could be really devastating to you if it's not the right one. Maybe you don't choose the choice that would cause that share to flip.
Yeah, just think about it.
Yeah,
come on. All right, so the thing where you're talking about, there's a right decision. So like, as an example, I had the blue company, and in the beginning of the game, I had built once. I part both of them such that on their first build, they paid out, and that is nice. And we'll get to that, I think, a little bit, the par values. But then once it had done that, a blue share came out and I couldn't tell if it was correct to buy it. There's a little bit of a push your luck thing where you don't want to split your revenue. I don't know if it's better to buy the share up at the plus one, wait till it gets to the plus three, or don't buy it at all. In this game, I had a really hard time evaluating that. Once it had paid its dividend, I don't know what the right answer is. Do you have any idea, Johnny, or theories on when it's best to buy it? Plus one, plus two, plus three. I know we're just talking about strategy now, but that was a decision space in this game that was super murky for me. And I was kind of like, I don't know, I'll buy it at three. I'll buy it at one.
I think that's one of those things that will become clear more easily the more you play it, because I don't think there's a lot to dig into there. I think that as you see the consequences of your actions over and over, you'll start to realize, because I don't, to answer your question, I cannot look at it right now and know immediately what the right decision is.
Yeah, as far as picking a company out of the marketplace, I can say that I wasn't really paying any attention to if it was a plus one, a plus two, or plus three. The most important factor was just which company was it and which one did I want to buy, and is it at a plus one? Great. Is it a plus three? Great. Am I going to get dividends? Even better. But I wasn't thinking too hard about it, I guess. I was just looking mostly for what companies I wanted to get a share or a second share in.
Yeah, there was one point in time where the green share was at plus two. And if the other share didn't come out, it needed to be at plus three in order to get another dividend payment. Now, if I had bought the share and the next one didn't come out, I just wouldn't have earned much money because the share still makes the value go up. So I would, you know, spend $50 and earn $2 right. if it was on plus two. But if it was on plus three, I could push it to that next dividend and earn a little bit more out of it. So there was one point in the game where the plus movement made a big difference in whether or not I should buy the share or hold off. And I actually held off and you ended up buying the share and we still got the dividend.
You Allie.
Yeah, Allie, yes.
Yeah, because then the balance there is if that plus factor off buying the share doesn't get you that dividend, you can just plan on laying some track or hope that someone else who might have a share lays the track. So you can still get there.
Yeah.
So I guess I wasn't banking too much on getting a dividend just off of the company buying the shares.
Yeah, it feels bad to buy a share in a company that's like really expensive or really at any value because that's you're paying approximately what the payout's going to be. And if you already have a share in the company, you don't want to spend that money. You want to just build track and hope that no one else buys your share. But then if they buy it, then your payout's cut in half. And so it's a funny balance in there. There was a couple of times where I bought shares going like, I will earn like $3 on this, I guess. But I could have, if I just kept building, it would have been worth more. So it feels weird near the end of the game where these shares are coming out and you're like, I don't want to buy it, but I don't want anyone else to buy it. So, okay, let's move on because we want to make this short and sweet. Union Station. The Union Station mechanic, the Chicago Union Station Company. The first game we mentioned when we played that super wrong and we thought it was just like all powerful and the only answer to the game was just buy every share and buying shares was the best and you just got $1 billion for buying shares because of that. We then realized that it was okay, you actually take each of the companies and divide by the shares and you just pay like a regular dividend for it, but it's a set value. And I don't know who got the most money off of those or if there's really a strategy to it. What's the implication of it? What do you think? It's sort of hard for me to evaluate. I couldn't tell.
Mostly, I think it's just that you want to have shares in something and have it not be diluted among your opponents. Because then you'll get, if you're at the $15 marker and you'll get $15 per company, then obviously if you're holding one share and nobody else has one, then you get the whole thing. But if everyone's holding one, then you have to split it three ways.
Yeah, I think those dividends are so small as to not be worth focusing on at all in the game. You know, $10, $15, and $20. If that's split two ways instead of three ways, that's not going to make a difference in the game, most likely.
Is it also worth noting that, so this is a dividend payout, but it does not bump your dividend tracker?
Right, yeah. So unlike every other share purchase you make, if you buy a share simply to get a bigger cut, it's a way worse deal because you're not moving the dividend value up, like you're saying. So you're paying for that share. You pay $30 to get an extra share. That's, you know, to get your third blue share. You're still the sole owner. And you just paid $30 to maintain the entire $20 instead of getting two-thirds of that and letting somebody else buy the expensive share.
There was a point where it incentivized me to buy a share that I didn't really want because I was the sole owner of another company and I was going to get the payout of that now. And I bought the bad share now, so I would get it now mm-hmm. versus like waiting for someone else to get the other share. Okay. What about selling shares? So I have heard that this can successfully be deployed by an early sale share for cash bump. And then you can buy some share that you couldn't, or at the end to keep somebody from hitting a big payout right at the end. So if Johnny has six shares or just to hurt their late mm-hmm. game net worth, right before the end of the game, if you have six shares of red and one comes up and I buy a red and sell it, then I've hurt you six times six and I've only lost in action.
Yeah. I think because of the way the share dilution works, it's going to be so rare that somebody's going to have enough shares in a single company to be hurt that much by the sale. So I think the first two things you said are probably really the main reasons. If it's the only thing you can do at the end of the game.
And you can't do it at the end of the game.
Right.
Too.
But if it's right before the 18th dividend and you're right. still.
I don't think we mentioned that you can't sell shares once the 17th dividend is
paid. Right. Sorry. So if it's right before the 17th dividend payout and you don't really have any other actions and it seems like it's a close game, then maybe you sell there just to knock off $18 off of somebody else's score or something like that. I find it hard to believe that's going to make a huge difference in the final scores most often, but I think that the big part where it's useful is maybe getting some cash early if there's specific shares you can't afford or something.
Yeah, it didn't feel like losing that one row off of the value was, didn't seem like that was really going to hurt you much.
In fact, it could end up resulting in you getting more dividend payments overall because they're spaced out more in the top. So if you get dropped down, maybe you get one extra dividend payment that you weren't going to get. They're just slightly smaller.
Mm, yep.
So that is the thing, though. They are smaller dividend payouts. So mm-hmm. that's something worth noting is that when you sell, like if I sell the share, I get the same value. Now you have a company and yeah, you'll get the full payout, but the payout is going to be $6 less per share.
But you also, it's split fewer ways.
That's true. Yeah.
So it might not even be less money.
Right. So yeah, we had a couple instances. We had two instances or at least one where there was a share that I wanted to buy. I wanted to buy your green share and I couldn't afford it. So I can see that early selling, you know, if it's something that I kind of think isn't great. But in this game, I thought, so Johnny sold one of Allie's shares. And I thought like, oh, that's rough. It's pretty early in the game. I think that's bad for Allie and she probably won't do well. And then she kicked her butt. So I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like it definitely is more about a cash influx than it is about hurting the other players who might be holding that company.
Yeah. And the only reason I sold the share that I sold was because it had just paid a dividend. The other share that I had was right about to pay a dividend. So I figured it seemed to make sense at the time to sell that one.
Par values. Let's talk about par values. So you start with $30. And there's a thing that it seems like in this game, like the opening, I guess. This is maybe just more than par values. It's the par values. And then there's the two cities that are north and south of Chicago. So there's two cities. So because each hex can have two companies in there. And again, this is a thing that I thought like seems obviously true. And then Allie defied it. First turn, I was like, Allie, you probably don't want to do that because she built east. And on her first build, didn't get a payout. And I was like, well, that's...
I do what I want.
And I was like, that's a, okay. I think that's wrong, but I want her to have a good time. I'm not going to criticize it. And again, we both lost, right? So it seems like you want to open one company at either 17 or 18 and one company at either 11 or 12. So you have two companies. They both on their first builds can move across. But then after thinking about it, Johnny opened one at 30. He spent all of his money on one company, did a build and got all 32 back, right? And it only cost him one action, but then right. Only one share. So it's, I don't know if there's any other opening on par values that is like right.
So besides, I think it's player count dependent.
Okay.
Because in a three player game, two people are going to get, most likely two people are going to get two shares. One person's going to get one.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's definitely the case because actually they you get them for free.
That's a question. You can three to five. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So yeah. So in a three-player game, whether you par them at appropriate values or not, two players are always going to get two, and one player is going to get one. I don't think you could ever end up with like 3-1 and one, but maybe you can. So I think in general, it does seem, despite the outcome of this game, it does seem like high value shares are better as long as you don't also end up being the last company to run and not get a payout right away. Because if you par high and then also have to take two actions to get that first payout, you've lost the efficiency that you were going for and maybe are blocked out of the most efficient route you could take for the game. So I think parring high is probably better. I don't know what led to
like
that not working. Yeah, I think so. Because you takes you, assuming that you don't end up being the last to operate, which we didn't explicitly say this, but we did say that the person that goes first is the lowest par value. If there's a tie, it's the last person to have parred their company. But then play just goes clockwise. So you don't necessarily know where you're going to end up in play order. So if you start a company high, in a three-player game, you're definitely going to get one of your companies to get there. So if you start a single company, there's actually no risk that you're not going to be able to get paid out.
But the dividends are spaced out more once you hit that 30 mark. They're spaced out.
Yeah, and that's where I think the randomness could impact that a little bit, because maybe getting that money in one action to be able to buy shares will be important, and maybe it won't be.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure.
So, yeah, I mean, at four and three players, I don't know, you know, it's essentially just going to be less control. Okay, at five, it seems you each get a company, right? You probably each get a company. Well, maybe not.
And the board state changes a lot more drastically between each of your decisions.
That's what I mean, less control.
So, yeah. Right. So, I mean, there are other games that there are several games that have randomness in it where I do not like the high player counts because of the fact that everything is different. Every time it comes back around to you, there's no planning at all. I think three felt like a good mix, as long as there's not like, I don't know if the par values, if there is going to be a right answer, that's not going to be one that we like at three, yeah, but it works at four. I don't know.
Are there any Cube Rails games that are two player?
Not really. They because of the whole shared incentive thing, that's the problem with a lot of these games, 18XX, Cube Rails, anything with shared incentives. If I buy your share and you buy my share, it's just a zero-sum game, right? So you can't like form a pseudo-alliance or make gains on this person while working with this other person.
And sometimes that's addressed with a dummy player, like 18CZ, right. Not Cube Rails, but that has a dummy third player that is co-controlled by the other two players depending on their priority order.
You play tug of war with the other player to help you and not help the other person. So you can do it. There are variants, but it's mostly variants. Three felt cozy to me. I like three. Yeah. I'd be happy to play to the player counts, but we didn't have the people at this particular moment in time to do that. So that's why we recruited my lovely wife.
To crush you.
We all needed a good dose of humility. Okay, so final thoughts on our first impression, right? We did a little bit of maybe more than first impression analysis, but we wanted to talk about it. So,
do we want to start with Allie?
What did you? What's your final thoughts of Union Station?
Sure. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I like a game that doesn't take too long to explain. It's nice that I have some familiarity with some other games, so none of this felt too foreign or hard to grasp. It was definitely easy to pick up. I like the form factor. I really like the form factor. Well, one of the main times that we get to play games is if we maybe go over to a friend's house, go spend a weekend with family or something, and we always have a big bag of board games that gets packed, and it takes up a big chunk of space in the car, it always feels like. And something like this, it's just a really nice size to take anywhere. That just really appeals to me. For me, it would fill the spot of Irish Gauge, but it's an even smaller box than Irish Gauge. I liked it. I'd play it again.
That's an overwhelmingly positive review.
So a solid 4.5 out of 10, right?
Yeah, that just, I mean, if I have to translate on Allie's like train gamers appreciation scale, that's like a 10 out of 10 from, you know, for any other train gamer. So what did you think, John?
I mean, it probably helps that I won, if I'm being perfectly honest.
It always does.
It always helps. But I liked it.
Good. I'm glad that you liked it, because I like the Cube Rails genre a lot, just in general. This isn't my favorite of them, but I would happily play it again. It's part of the genre. It's very similar to a lot of the other games. There's nothing immediately off the bat that I hated about it. And, you know, putting it on the veto list.
Like Trans-Siberian would edge it out for you, for sure.
Right? The form factor is nice. A lot less important to me than it is to you, apparently.
It's the best.
It's just so cute.
I would definitely play Irish Gauge over this. I know some people don't like the perceived randomness. I mean, I think it's an interesting statistical exercise. But some people don't like that, but I really like Irish Gauge a lot. Trans-Siberian, one of our recent favorites. Those definitely rate higher than this for me. I would still absolutely play this again.
Cool. And I do really appreciate what the New Mill Industries are doing. It's a small production thing. Just to read a little thing he sent to me, Daniel Newman, in a DM that we had. He said, so we're kind of taking a DIY slash punk rock approach to board game publishing. We're doing no marketing. We don't hire artists. I do all the graphic design myself. We use print-on-demand vendors in the U.S. and assemble and ship the games ourselves. So our turnaround is super fast, but the prices are a bit higher. We cap our print runs at 500 and never do a second one. And the rights go back to the designers as soon as the Kickstarter is fulfilled. Union Station will be our fourth game and the first from a designer that isn't me or Tony Miller. So I guess it's probably those two guys doing it.
Did you catch that? The new Mill comes from their names, obviously.
Oh, Daniel Newman and Mill. Yeah, that's cool. Clever. Yeah.
So just in reviewing Union Station's pros here, it's easy to teach. It packs a lot of meaningful decisions into a short game in a physically small package. It asks you to test a hypothesis over repeated plays because I don't feel like the game's decisions have obvious answers. Well, they aren't to me anyway. And that makes me want to play more of it. And again, I have a tolerance for random events, and I actually view it as a plus for a game of this length. And all that leads me to say that I really like this game and I want to play more of it. And I applaud Travis Hill for putting his take on Cube Rails out into the world, and New Mill Industries for getting it into people's hands. They sent us this copy of the game for review, and we appreciate that. So I just don't want any of our lack of enthusiasm to be discouraging to them, because it's hard to make something new, and I think they deserve encouragement. And so if that sounds at all interesting to you, then I think you should go check out the Kickstarter. Again, that's on October 12th. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
Based on what I know of our community, if you want a copy of this, I would be on there when it launches, because it will probably be sold out within a couple hours at most.
Right, 500 is going to go quick.
Yeah, I mean, look at Mainline.
Yeah.
They had to open that up because it sold out within minutes, I think.
Yeah. Well, that does it for us here at Train Shuffling. Thank you so much, Allie, for coming and talking with us. I know it's not exactly your typical jam or, like, you know, your wheelhouse, I guess, to talk board game deconstruction on a podcast.
Yeah, you're welcome. I mean, it was fun. Something different.
Cool. I'll be interested to hear, you know, what listeners thought of having Allie on and her perspective. At least I think that they will appreciate hearing what other people that aren't as crazy into these games as we are thought of it. So, yeah, cool. Thanks.
So I'm going to put us on the spot a little bit. We have talked about this, but look forward to our next full episode. Will probably be a top 5 or top 10 top Cube Rails games. We've played a number of them recently,
like 5. So we
I've played several more, and hopefully you can play some of the other ones that I've played that you haven't, so we can have sort of the same pool of games to go from. But we did a lot of comparing Union Station to other games that we've played in the genre. So I just wanted to bring up that we'll dive a little bit deeper into that.
Yeah, that does it for us. Keep an eye out on our Twitter feed and, you know, join the Discord. And obviously we have the Patreon if you're interested in supporting us, which gets you in our Discord. We are hoping to stream 1880 at some point soon. We ordered...
Received.
And our fourth lav mic for the setup there. So we can have a fourth player now.
And our fourth and fifth cables. Yeah. So we can maybe expand to 5 players. I don't know if we'll be able to seat us around the table, but
yeah,
we have basically, that was comfy. Like the last piece of equipment that we really needed to be able to do streams, because, you know, we used to have this, the table mic, so we could have as many people as we wanted, but it didn't sound very good. And the mics were really expensive. So we only got 3 to start, and it was very limiting. So we're really happy and we really appreciate all of your support. And I'm doing a hand thing to show
like
how much
politician.
We appreciate.
Bob Bowl says thank you.
But we really appreciate all the support, and we're excited to be able to do 4-player streams now.
Yeah, so we're going to try and do 1880 because we didn't want to do 3-player 1880. Yeah. But that's high on the list. We've got some really high-quality players lined up to... We got to schedule it, but come over and play with us soon. So hopefully Allie will let me do that. That's not how our relationship works.
That's a joke.
Yeah. Okay. Run your trains and pay your dibs, everybody, and good night.
Choo choo.
Choo choo. Choo choo. Well, that's going to do it for us here at the Train Rush. Thank you.
The Train Rush? I thought that was
Jesus
a different
Christ. Wow. Nice. That's good.
Hello. You're welcome. Have I earned my keep?
You did. Did you notice that?
I think it went right by me.
Wow.
It sounded right. Okay. The word train was there.
This is the last stop on this train. Everyone, please leave the train. Thank you for riding with MTA New York City Transit.